All right, it's the bonus hour. Hi, everybody. Welcome to it.
The Babu Babu Bonus Hour.
Bonus Hour. Wendy, because you haven't been in recently, through no fault of your own, it's been a busy couple of days. We had the 4th of July celebration last week. You took Friday off, and then yesterday you and I were part of a big WGN corporate meeting. So we've not, you and I have not discussed this. It happened on Friday. Anna Balaval was in for you.
Oh,
yep.
I love her.
Yep, she's very lovable. We talked about the fact that Artie Johnson of Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In had passed away, and you wanted to weigh in on it just a little bit. Now, I need your opinion on this, because I watched a bunch of clips of Artie Johnson, and you accused me of killing Artie Johnson, which I didn't do, but I did say his name last week, which is a lot of times in show business, that's all it takes for people to die, is I say their name and then they die.
We've talked about him a little bit.
Yeah.
A lot recently.
Well, his name came up because there's kind of a show on, is it Netflix that's running the Rowan and Martin reunion show, where they've got a couple, only a few cast members from the show, Lily Tomlin, Ruth Buzzi, and Joanne Worley show up, and they show a bunch of clips, and then they also have stars of today kind of doing jokes from Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In.
Right. I saw it before you.
Yeah.
And told you that, and because in my heart, Laugh-In was the best show ever on TV. And I remember saying that, like, it needed to be funnier.
Right.
Now.
Right.
Like, they had, like, one-liners coming from people that, yeah. It didn't work, really.
The show was built, now keep in mind, it's the late 1960s, so maybe as a nation, our comedic...
It is Netflix. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, it is Netflix? Yeah. All right. So a lot of what Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In was in the 60s was just taglines. There wasn't anything behind it. You would just have somebody...
You
like,
bet your sweet bippy.
You would, yeah. Right. Dick Martin would just say, you bet your sweet bippy. Or Judy Carn would say, sock it to me. Or Sammy Davis Jr. would say, here comes the judge. And there was nothing else but that. And that's all it took. And it made people laugh. So in these clips of Artie Johnson's, I said the other day, a lot of it is now lost because it's not funny to just have a German helmet on, poke your head up through the weeds and say, very interesting. The audience needs more. But back then, in 1968, that's all we needed was for a German soldier to say that was interesting, and we went, oh, that's good stuff. His other thing was, I'm sure you remember this, he'd ride a tricycle. Oh, yeah. The old guy?
Yeah.
All right, so, yeah, that's valid, too. I didn't talk about that, but Artie Johnson would ride a tricycle, and then the tricycle would tip over. End of scene.
It killed, though. I'm
People
sorry.
Loved it.
Didn't you laugh back
People
then?
People loved it. Yeah. But again, I was four.
I know. You know? I'm ashamed to admit I laughed. I may have laughed because my mom was laughing.
Right. And not just laughing, but couldn't breathe laughing. People were laughing so hard at that. The other thing was with Artie Johnson is he would play that the old guy. Ruth Buzzi would be on a bench, and Artie Johnson would come by as a dirty old man. Now, the one that I did think was very funny, see if you remember this, because Ruth Buzzi referenced this in a tweet about Artie Johnson. So he dies, and see if you'll understand this tweet, because it's very cryptic. She says, rest in peace, Artie Johnson. Great doing comedy with you. I guess there really is a hereafter. Do you know what that means? It's really hard. You have to be such a Rowan and Martin's aficionado to understand this, but I give her credit because she never explained it. In one of the scenes between the old guy and the old woman, I think she had a name. I don't remember what it was. I think his character was just called Dirty Old Man, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
And she had like a hairnet on.
Was it
on
Eunice or something
stockings.
Like that? I don't remember.
I'll try and find out.
So he would nudge up to her on the bench. Yeah, he'd make that noise, which we now get to hear in Walking Dead.
Oh my God.
Same noise.
They're probably sampling him.
Yeah, they are. They're using old Artie Johnson tapes on The Walking Dead. So he nudges up to her and he goes, do you believe in the hereafter? And she says, yes, I do. And then he says, then you know what I'm hereafter.
Oh, God.
And then
God.
She slugs him with the purse.
And we all laughed at that.
Oh, we couldn't stop laughing. It was 19. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
It was
solid takes.
It was, that's, if you have ADHD, which I do, that's it.
That's all you needed.
And I don't think we had it back then. I mean, really, I think people had longer attention spans, but you didn't need it for laughing.
No. But isn't that crazy? Because I've said this in the past, whenever I... Gladys and Tyrone, that's it. That's absolutely it. Whenever I've watched one, like, every once in a while, I'll find a channel that's running one late at night, and I'll watch it, and I won't even... No, I take that back. I was going to say I won't even laugh once. There's one thing on laughing that consistently makes me laugh every time I see it, and I have to admit, it's as stupid as anything they ever did, but I can't get through it without laughing.
What is it?
It's when the Farkle family introduces themselves, and they're all saying their names. I'm Fred Farkle, this is Fanny Farkle, and they're going through the Farkle family, and then they get to two of the twins, and their names are Simon and Garfarkle. That's comedy gold. I don't know who came up with that, but that's the funniest thing ever.
I was talking to you about this years ago and how much I love laughing, and you said you had seen an episode, and you said, do me a favor, try and find an episode and watch it. They're all over YouTube.
Are they?
Yeah, because I went and watched it, and I refused to accept the fact that it wasn't working for me, but it really wasn't.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah.
Because it holds such a high place in the world of comedy. I'm sure you know this, but Lorne Michaels was a writer. He started out as a performer in Canada. And then as George Schlatter is finding writers for it, he sees him and likes him and brings him over, and they're doing laughing. So he kind of learned how to do comedy on television because of laughing. But the criticism that Saturday Night Live has had is that all their stuff is too long. People always go, oh man, they beat this to death. They made it go too long. But on laughing, like we said,
it was never too long.
Never too long.
And the difference, and I'm just surprised it hasn't happened more, is laughing would just, their out would just be some goofy tagline. Like, right. I could see Kenan Thompson just saying something stupid and ending a scene.
Right.
I mean,
sometimes they would say something stupid, do a take to the camera.
Right. So,
like, isn't that stupid? Yes.
So SNL should do that. Because sometimes it's like, I'm really loving the sketch.
Yeah.
And then it has no ending.
I know.
Like, you should have ended it.
Right. So ideally, somewhere in the middle would be the best way to play it.
Yes.
You don't want anything to go too long or too short. But the rules for what a scene or a sketch was on Saturday Night Live would never hold up with what a scene or a sketch is on Ronan Martin's Laughing. It just wouldn't.
But with the reboot, you know, and all I can think of is Cardi B. She was there, and it's like they're at a cocktail party and, you know, dancing, and then the music stops, and they do a one-liner.
Right.
Were any of them funny? They really weren't. I just felt like for that moment, this should have been, like, really quality material, not dad jokes.
I think because of the sheer volume, I think Ronan Martin's Laughing was on for 5 or 6 years,
Was it on that long?
Yeah, it was on for a long time. And that's when shows, like a season of a show was 34 or 36 or 38 episodes. So there were a lot of episodes of Ronan Martin's Laughing. So you multiply that by how many jokes there were. Some had to have landed. I do remember when it would air on a Monday night, I remember my mom and dad and brother and I laughing uproariously for the full hour of the show. So some of them had to have been good, but when I go back and watch, other than Simon and Garfunkel, nothing makes me laugh.
But
that one always makes me laugh.
If you're in a room, I mean, because I'll be honest with you, there are certain shows that we watch as a family.
Yeah.
But as, like, Dylan likes to watch on his own in his room, and there are some times that I just prefer to watch it on my iPad because I don't want any disruptions.
Yeah.
I like to just, because especially Walking Dead, Jim was not really 100% in last season, so sometimes he would watch with me, but he would talk, and I'm like, you're bringing me out of it. I love you, but I can't. So then I'll go into my room and watch it on my iPad.
Yeah.
But back then, all we did was watch shows as a family.
Right. Agreed.
And I know we were talking, it might have been John Cleese, we were talking, we talked to some Monty Python person, and I just remember I would sit there with my mom and sister, and it was Sunday nights at 10:30 or something
for
after
Monty
the
Python?
News. Yeah. And I would watch it, and I had such a hard time understanding the British accent as a kid. I really did.
Right.
So I would literally laugh when they laughed, because it's just kind of this group setting.
Right.
So then I'm thinking back of laughing. It's like, oh, my God, my mom was just really guffawing.
And, yeah.
And was I laughing just because she and my sister and brother were laughing, or was it? Did I find it funny? I just knew it was beautiful colors.
Well, boy, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was very, very hippie, colorful, very
bright,
Peter Max inspired.
Right there. Yep.
Yeah.
I couldn't have gotten that stuff then.
I think because most of it wasn't being played to the high end, most of it was a guy on a tricycle tipping over. You
but
know,
how would a 4-year-old kid think that's funny?
I don't know the answer to that. I know every once in a while there'd be a name mentioned, and I didn't know who the name was. You know, they would do some political figure.
Yeah.
They'd go, maybe a Jerry Rubin's house. I go, Jerry, I don't know who that is, you know, because I was five. But for most of it, it was universal enough to where a young kid and a parent or a grandparent could watch it and all kind of laugh at the same thing.
I just read somewhere that laughing got Nixon elected.
Yeah.
Do you believe that?
Yeah. I think it helped because he was considered so not one of the people. And then he shows up on Laughing and says, "Sock it to me," in a really poor, I mean, when you see it, he was a very stiff guy, and the TV didn't do well with Richard Nixon. But when you saw him do that, "Sock it to me," you know, you just go, wow, they had to do this syllable by syllable. Cause this
I
guy,
have it. Do you want to hear
yeah,
it?
Yeah. You see if you can tell just by listening or seeing it. It's
"Sock it to me."
He doesn't know what he's doing.
But that's what got him elected?
Because he was perceived as being not what he was, not one of us. He was,
yeah, I guess,
he was
yeah.
off on his own, and then all of a sudden he shows up on America's Favorite Comedy Show. It's very much like when Bill Clinton showed up on Arsenio Hall
with the saxophone.
He's one of us. Look, he's on Arsenio Hall. He's one of us.
I am bothered that it was on Arsenio Hall's show.
Yeah, it could have been anywhere, right?
I wish I it was somewhere else.
I know. How about on Laughing the fact that, remember Alan Seuss?
Yes.
Okay. So the whole joke with Alan Seuss was they would just have him do stuff, and he was very effeminate. So that was it. That was the beginning, the middle, and the end of anything with Alan Seuss is we'll just put him out there, and he'll be effeminate, and that's it. There was nothing behind it at all. He was doing, was it called Uncle Al's Sports Corner or something like that, where he would do sports?
I don't remember.
And the whole, I'm telling you, every single time he was on, but again, we were all accepting of it. Look, an effeminate guy is doing sports. It's hysterical. But it wasn't really.
I didn't think he was effeminate.
Oh, you didn't?
Not at the time. I didn't know what that even meant.
Go back and watch it now.
I know when I see it now, but I
But they weren't, I mean, good for them because they had a gay guy on television and they weren't masking it like other shows did. Oh, yeah. But they weren't doing anything to hide it at all.
But they weren't saying, I guess I didn't even know what any of that was.
No.
Then.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he had a silly voice or different voice, but.
But that's how anybody who was gay back then, they were just silly. Charles Nelson Reilly was silly. Paul Lynde was silly. Nobody thought anything more than that or less than that. So what I'm saying is, in some ways, that was a trailblazing move.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, when you watch it now, you go, but there was nothing else there. He was just being effeminate. That was it.
He said funny things, didn't he?
He was just, I don't know. Watch those scenes and see what you make out of them.
All right. Well, Lily Tomlin with her Ernestine.
That was very funny.
That was funny.
Very funny. Right. I agree with you. Edith Ann and Ernestine were very funny. But I think that was more because they just let Lily Tomlin be Lily Tomlin. I don't think, like, she was writing all those bits.
Really?
Yeah.
That was really funny.
Yeah.
The other stuff, Goldie Hawn was just adorable, how she'd just crack up and they'd write words on her and she'd be a go-go dancer.
Right.
I liked.
Right.
The Doors. In fact, I seem to remember trying to come up like with a refrigerator box or something and painting.
Did you make your own?
Yes, but I had nothing funny to say because I was little.
What if you
hello?
Did
that?
Right.
I just did that.
Well, but that's all Joanne Worley did.
Woo!
That's all she did.
I'm scruffy now, but I used to be able to do Joanne Worley. What a...
Go back and watch, like, the best moments of Joanne Worley. All it, it's her just starting to say a line and then blowing the line and then just going, ooh, and that's it. There's nothing else there.
I guess not.
She would just sing the note. So what were the writers' meetings like?
I don't
where
know,
they just
man.
Said, all right, we'll have Sammy Davis Jr. say, here comes the judge. That'll work for a while. Then Joanne will just sing a note. And then we'll just throw water on somebody. That was it.
That was pretty much it. What, were they just smoking cigars, drinking whiskey during the writers' meetings?
I would imagine that was most of it. And yet, after all that, it holds such an important role in the maturation of TV comedy.
But why doesn't it hold up? Why doesn't it? Because honestly, even nostalgia takes over at some point.
Right.
And for, I'm telling you, when you told me, Wendy, have you watched them recently? Do me a favor. I was shocked that even you were not defending it.
I can't think of a show that holds up less than Rona Martin's Laugh-In. I still, anytime I watch the Mary Tyler Moore Show, I laugh. Anytime I watch the Dick Van Dyke Show, I laugh. Bob Newhart makes me laugh. I've seen some of those episodes 8 times, yeah. 9 times. They still make me laugh. But with Rona Martin's Laugh-In, which I remember in my head being funnier than all those shows, yeah. When I watch it now, it just leaves me high and dry.
My son Dylan has gotten into Cheers. He had never seen Cheers.
It's brilliant.
That show is so funny.
Yeah.
Coach, I forgot how great he was.
Yeah. I'll tell you the other one that everybody just kind of just lets float away, and it shouldn't, is Taxi. Taxi
yeah.
is just as solid a show as you could ever imagine. So funny.
Did Rhea Perlman make you think of Danny DeVito?
No, she didn't. But, yeah, there's the obvious tie-in. Yeah.
I just forgot. I mean, Diane was so good.
Yeah. Didn't you legitimately, there were a couple times on Cheers, even though it was as funny was, remember the time where they agree, Diane is going away. She's going overseas for a while, but she's going to come back. She
yeah.
tells, I'm going to come back. And then she leaves, and he says, I'm trying to remember what his line is. It's something like, have a nice life. He says
yes,
it really,
yes.
really quietly.
Because he knows in his heart she's
she
not
coming back. And I just went, like, I was really young when that happened, but I go, oh, I know what you're going through.
It's so funny. Dylan's 16. He had never seen Cheers. I don't even know if he'd ever heard of it. And
yeah.
it's just, you know, thank God for Netflix and Hulu.
Yeah.
And he started watching it and thought it was pretty funny.
So good.
And he asked me all these questions like, do they get together? I'm like, I'm not
no.
telling you these things.
No, make him watch.
What's up with Coach? I said, I don't want to talk to you. Does Sam ever leave the show? I'm like, I can't, just watch.
Do you remember an episode on Cheers where Sam, they alluded to Sam's brother, and then he shows up. He's on a full episode of Cheers, but they never show him. He's real popular, and he's always got people around him, so they keep showing him.
Like the backside of
him? But from Sam Malone's point of view, as he's watching him be outshadowed by his brother, how his brother is just better at everything.
And you couldn't think anyone would be better than Sam Malone.
Right.
Who
right.
was his brother?
They never showed him. He's in the
Spoiler
whole episode,
alert.
But you don't see, I mean, you see the room that he's in. You see people gathered around enjoying him, but you never see him. They also did that with Vera. They never showed her.
Oh, that's Norm's wife?
Norm's wife.
Yeah. Boy, that show, honestly, I hadn't watched it in years. It's totally
really
stands out.
Very funny stuff. All right, we'll take a break, and then Ryan Burrow will join us. He'll give you some news. That's coming up in a minute. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, it's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and Ryan Burrow has our news. But first, we were talking about Cheers, and Matt has called us at the number we gave earlier, 312-235-2525. And there may be a correction in your future, Bill.
Uh-oh.
Hi, Matt.
Hey, Matt. What's up?
Oh, I love you too.
Oh,
so, Bill.
Yeah.
Vera was shown once, and she was actually played by George Wendt's real life wife.
Vera.
However, her face was not shown. She was coming down the bar steps,
mm-hmm.
about to walk in, and I think Frasier threw a pie and smacked her in the face. And all you could see was a whipped cream filled face. But she was, you saw everything else about her. She was blonde, she smelled, and she was George Wendt's real life wife.
Oh, that's so funny. I didn't know that. Well, thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And I love
Matt, did you send us? You sent us Bad Ronald. And then you sent us another movie.
Desperate Lies.
Okay, hang on a minute. You sent us another movie, Desperate Lies, is it?
Yeah, with Helen Hunt jumping out of the window.
Oh.
And why did you send us that again? I can't remember.
Because we brought it up. And yeah. You were like, oh, God, I haven't seen that either. So I sent it to you.
Oh, you're the best.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, you know, who needs Netflix when you got Mattflix?
Hey.
Trademark that, Matt. Mattflix. That'll take off.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I don't know what that movie is with Helen Hunt jumping through a window.
It somehow came up a couple of weeks ago. I don't remember exactly why.
All right.
But she had, Helen Hunt's character had some drug issues.
Oh, right.
And then she jumps out of a window. If you've had drug issues, you know that's what you do. You jump out of a window.
Meredith Baxter Burney did at one point, too.
She did,
I'm
too.
Sure.
Yeah.
I am not an addict.
Yep.
All right. Well, I have to borrow that.
All right.
It's in our office. All right. Have you seen Bad Ronald yet?
Yeah. Love it.
Did you watch it?
Yeah.
You did not.
Yes, I did. Quiz me.
All right. Well, I need to see it.
Thanks, Ryan. The other quick thing about R.D. Johnson, and I know
it's interesting.
And then he'd throw in something after that. You would usually go, but stupid.
Oh, right.
There was always some.
He had a name. That character had a name. And it was
helmet. Is it helmet?
You might be right. I gotta check.
Or maybe he just wore a helmet. Maybe that's what I was thinking of. I can't remember. That's weird to name your child after headwear, as my daughter Visor will tell you. Do you remember on the show Tattletales
with
the late great
Bert Convy?
Bert Convy, yes. Where they would have the banana section. Remember, sometimes they'd go to the banana section.
Yes.
The audience was split into three different groups, and the yellow section was called the banana section. Although he didn't call one group the cesarean section, because I think that would have been funny. But he didn't do it. He was Bert Convy. He didn't need my advice.
You should have been hosting that.
Whenever Artie Johnson was on, you would always be on with either your husband or your wife or your longtime mate. And Artie Johnson was married for years and years and years to a very tall, statuesque German woman named Gisela, who would be on with him. And the whole thing there that was funny was that she had a thick German accent and couldn't understand Artie, and Artie couldn't understand her. That was the inside joke. But I always wondered how Gisela took to his German soldier character, or if he just didn't show her, like when Laffin would come on, if he would pull the plug out and go, oh, no, power shortage.
You know, I'm sure she inspired it. His name was Wolfgang.
Wolfgang.
A former German stormtrooper who hadn't come to terms with the end of World War II. He constantly muttered the phrase, very interesting, in response to most everything.
Yes.
He also played Pieter Rosmenko, an Eastern European song and dance man, and Rabbi Shanker.
Rabbi Shanker? Really?
An addled Indian guru. Another of his popular characters was that of Tyrone F. Horny. But spelled,
no,
yes.
Did they really? Yeah.
H-O-R-N-E-I-G. So maybe Horney.
Oh, they.
Tyrone F. Horney, a dirty old man who constantly came on the spinster Gladys Ruth Buzzy on a park bench, only to be beaten by Gladys with her oversized purse.
So how does that play today? Like if they're doing a comedy sketch show, and somebody goes, old guy hitting on old woman, and then she hits him with the bag. Does that even make the final cut? Or does somebody go, no, that's not going to work. Tell Mr. Horney we're not interested.
But back then, I'm sorry.
Perfectly acceptable.
It really was.
Perfectly acceptable.
And, you know, you'd be warned about dirty old men.
Yeah.
You really would.
Do you remember the role that Artie Johnson played on an episode of The Partridge Family?
No.
The premise was he was an out-of-work artist that the Partridges befriended, and the agreement was is that he could live with them for a while, and he would paint a mural on their garage door.
Oh, I do remember this.
And then do you remember what he painted?
No.
A naked woman.
Maybe I don't remember
Much
this.
Much to the chagrin of the neighbors of the Partridges.
Yeah. How'd Shirley feel about that?
She was indifferent. She thought she understood he was an artist and he needed to have his say because he was an artist and that's what they do. But, you know, she got the scorn of the neighbors. So
Artie Johnson won an Emmy for his work on Laugh-In in 1969.
Yeah, best
on
the supporting actor, right?
Big screen, they don't give the the category. He on the big screen, he portrayed Count Dracula's George Hamilton, sniving manservant Reinfeld in the 1970 Love at First Bite.
Yeah.
That was a bad movie.
Yeah, it was.
In the 80s, he guest starred in a number of hit shows such as The Dukes of Hazzard, Fantasy Island, Trapper John, M.D., and Hotel. He also lent his voice as a voiceover artist to animated shows such as Justice League, The Sylvester and Tweety Mysteries, The Snorks, The Smurfs, and Animaniacs.
Wow. It's an impressive resume.
He is survived by his wife, Gisela.
The tall, statuesque German woman
who
is not allowed
brother,
to see some of his characters.
His brother, Kozlo Johnson, C-O-S-L-O-U-G-H.
Kozlo.
Who was a comedy writer for shows including The Monkees Laughin' and the Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's impressive.
Bill Left didn't know something,
Ryan. I didn't
Ryan.
Know that.
I think we knew that he didn't know it.
I didn't know that.
He's usually pretty good at faking it.
Would you agree with me that for a while in the 60s and the 70s, Artie Johnson looked like the American version of Austin Powers?
Yeah.
Didn't he? He had the same kind of thicker glasses, the same style haircut, the same hippie-inspired clothing.
Although I think hippie, I think more Henry Gibson. Is he still with us?
No, he died several years ago. Yeah, but Henry Gibson always played like the button-down priest.
I guess.
You know, he was a little more...
He had a flower,
but,
though.
Yeah, when he would do that, and now a poem by Henry Gibson.
Yeah.
Yeah, then he was very hippified.
As are you.
Yes, I am.
Somebody
Ryan,
says...
Ryan, do you like the beads I put in the doorway when you come into the studio? You have to go through the beads and the lava lamp. Don't burn yourself on the lava lamp.
I won't.
Be careful.
Somebody says All in the Family still holds up,
beautifully.
Sad to say, and it is sad to say.
It holds up so... Actually, I would argue with what's happened recently, it holds up better than ever.
Yeah.
I would love to see... You know, when we had Norman Lear on, I'm trying to remember... If Donald Trump, if he had won the...
I don't think he had.
Did he?
Let me look.
But I would love to know what their take would be on the Donald Trump years. You know, if the Bunkers and the Stivics were still living together as a four-person unit, how would that play out?
Like the Disney brawl.
It would be similar to the brawl at Disneyland. It would probably be more violent.
Ryan, you've been to Disney several times. I don't know about land and or world, but I mean, I know everybody says it's the happiest place on earth. I've had a lot of trials and tribulations that things have gone wrong. But it's not always the happiest place on earth. Don't you think families get stressed and...
Oh gosh, the whole thing.
It's sometimes not even fun.
Do you think it's because, number one, there's high expectations? You've been planning this trip for sometimes years.
Yes.
It's a very expensive bunch of days.
Yes.
You know, so all that, and the fact, like I said earlier, you didn't expect it to be quite as hot and the lines to be quite so long and the food to be not as good as you had hoped. There's a bunch of factors that when you're there, you're like, oh, this isn't the way I planned it.
I've always wondered, like, because, you know, we've got correspondents all over the country. Alex Stone lives in Los Angeles, and I follow him on Twitter and Facebook, and he's taking his family there. But that's like going to Great America for us.
Right.
You know, for us to go out there, you know, it's kind of a big deal, and same thing in Orlando. But for him, it just could be, oh, you know, we got nothing else going on today. Which is the opposite of how we have to plan every single minute and get our fast passes and make switches and where are we going to eat, how are we going to eat. And in the situations that I've been, it's always been big family gatherings. So you've got to coordinate. Okay, are we splitting up? Are we staying together?
Really?
Yeah.
Like extended
how many
family
people,
and stuff?
How many people are there with family reunion shirts?
Sure.
And, you know, you're trying to coordinate how to move 12 people through this park.
And someone doesn't want to go on Haunted Mansion because they're scared, but we have to go. We're here.
And it's always so blasted hot.
Yeah.
And I don't think Epcot has any trees.
No, Epcot does have trees.
They really don't. There's kind of this...
Go to the Black Forest part of Germany when you're at Epcot.
I just listen to people talk about it, and it's like, I just don't get how it's fun. I don't get how vacations are fun. It's so oh my God, we're going out on vacation, and I got to get the dog taken care of, someone to watch the house.
Yeah.
It's just too much. It's so much stress. And then, you know, the pre-planning, I'm not very good at.
Yeah.
And then, like, when you get on to your place, you're like, oh, I'm relaxing for, like, maybe 2 days. And then I start going, oh, God, I got to pack this and make sure I don't forget that.
Don't you think it all depends on what you're looking for in a vacation? Like, if you're going to the Disney properties, there's not a whole lot of downtime.
Yeah,
you have to keep moving.
We
you know?
Have buffer days in between.
You need that. That's a smart idea.
We didn't learn that right away, but you do need a buffer day.
Yeah.
And we had Norman Lear on our show on the air with us October 29th, 2015.
So Trump was not a factor yet.
No.
That's why I didn't ask him, because I didn't know he would be the president. But I have so many times wondered how they would handle this. You know, I read the book about Norman Lear. So it talks about in the book how he and Carol O'Connor were at constant odds on Archie's take on various things. And I think this would probably fit that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know how, I mean, I'd be so curious to see what they did with it. But Carol O'Connor was the exact opposite of Archie Bunker. Carol O'Connor was extreme to the left. Extreme to the left.
Great actor.
So, yeah. Right.
Because he was so believable as Archie.
Yeah.
Did you ever read the script to Seinfeld post 9/11?
No.
Oh, it's great. So
no,
basically,
where's that?
Seinfeld signed off before 9/11.
Yeah.
And so they essentially, this guy who, I can't remember if he was a writer on the show or aspired to be a writer on the show, he wrote an entire half-hour episode of the first Seinfeld episode after 9/11.
Oh, wow.
And it's really interesting stuff about, you know, Kramer going down to help out the firefighters, but, you know, getting all, you know, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it's true to the moment, and it's funny at the same time. I'll see if I can find it for you.
It's Billy Domino, D-O-M-I-N-E-A-U, the French Domino.
Oh, I got to see this.
Seinfeld episode about 9/11. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds right. And
it's online?
Yeah. You can read the whole script. It's really
funny. Is it funny?
I think so. I mean, the whole thing is that I think one of the plots is that Jerry's kind of freaked out because he thinks that because with all the dust in the air and everything's got dust on it, and he's cleaning all the dust and he's vacuuming it up, and he realizes that it, you know, unfortunately it could be people. And it's just this whole kind of freak out about
that. Could be Bob Sacamano.
Could be.
Do you ever, Twin Towers
is what it's called.
That's the name of the episode or the script?
I'd obviously never.
No, it's just a script. I'll send you this link. It's from slate.com.
Oh, that's brilliant.
But we should read this and try and get this guy on if it's worthy of a guest. If we, you know, it's tasteless, I've been told.
I felt it could air in prime time. And granted, we're, you know, how many years after 9/11, obviously, but
Domino is a member of a sketch comedy group called Gentleman Party and a freelancer for SNL's Weekend Update.
Oh,
so he put this together.
Wow.
I bet it's gonna be good.
It reminds me, years ago I found a book called either The Beaver Papers or The Beaver Files, and what it is a bunch of famous writers from different periods in time. They all submitted scripts to Leave It to Beaver.
Okay.
So
they just did that so they could put Beaver in the title.
I bought it.
That's what I'm saying.
That's all I needed. So you've got everybody from Alfred Hitchcock to Shakespeare. You name the prominent writer, and they wrote a script for Leave It to Beaver. And it's really funny because they're all in the character of whoever the writer is.
Okay.
You know? So I didn't expect much of it, but boy, is it funny. And I don't know, it's probably out of print because I bought it 25 years ago.
You can always find something somewhere.
I guess so. Speaking of Saturday Night Live, is it okay to bring this to the air, this guy that I sat by in a restaurant the other night?
Oh, yeah.
Or is there not time?
Oh, I want to talk about it so badly.
Should we wait? I'll just tell you the gist of it. We're sitting next to a guy. We're sitting outside at a restaurant. And you know how there's always one voice that you no matter what you do, that's all you're hearing, right? So this guy was very loud, very opinionated. He, as he mentioned several times, he's made a lot of money in his life.
Really?
He would often go, well, listen, I'm a guy and I've made a lot of money in my life, so I know. And then he would say whatever. All right. So he was explaining to the people at his table that Saturday Night Live only has one or maybe two seasons left before they pull the plug because
they now do every sketch as a political sketch. This is what he told the people at his table. He goes, it's all political stuff now, start to finish. From the time the show starts until it ends, that's all they do is political stuff. He said, and people don't want to see that anymore. They're done with that. And then I said to my wife, should I show him that the ratings prove otherwise? They had the highest rated season in their last 12 or 14 years. I said, should I pour? And she goes, nah, just let him know. He's made a lot of money in his life. He knows what he's doing. So he just kept explaining. He's going on and on about how the show fell off the rails.
He's so wrong.
And I know he's wrong.
Poor Keenan. What's he going to do, right?
Well, they're all done.
Back to Good Burger?
Well, then he went through the cast. He knew enough about the show to go through the cast and explain why they're done. And then even on cast members I agreed with him on, like, I'm not a fan of Leslie Jones. I don't think she's very good. So when he gets to her, he said, they've got her playing, like he was mentioning different political people. He goes, and she's wrong for the role and she's done, like that. And I'm like, look, I don't even like Leslie Jones, but I have to defend her on this. That's not all she does on the show.
And it is, it's always been political, always.
Forever.
It's sometimes too much even for me. Can we do something funny without mentioning Trump?
Yeah.
But I am no longer the target demo. Oh my God, kids love it. And it's like, it blows my mind that they even know some of these things that they're being talked about.
Yeah. And the top 10 sketches this year, I don't know if you guys saw what Rolling Stone did with the top 10 sketches. Most of them aren't political at all.
Really?
Yeah. The one where, what's my name? Have you seen that? The What's My Name?
Oh, the game show.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I do. That's so silly.
And then who was the actor who was the oil tycoon? He was, talking about crushing your enemies. That ended up being the number one. I can't remember what his name is now. Really famous actor who I can't remember. He was supposed to be the father of Pete Davidson's character, and they were in high school, and it was parent day when everyone came and spoke, and he talked about crushing your...
Yeah.
He was an oil tycoon, and he wakes up every morning trying to think about how to crush his opponents. And that one ended up being one of the funniest, and gosh, I watched it like six times.
Ryan, that must have been from 2 years ago, because as this man who's made a lot of money pointed out, it's all political sketches now.
Yeah.
That's all they have now.
It's true. And the funniest political one was probably the Supreme Court.
Adam Driver.
Yeah. I like beer.
Yeah.
That one was a good one from last year.
Very funny.
SNL is definitely relevant and will continue to be so, especially now with the... I'm not kidding. Younger people are so much more plugged in. I can't speak for you, but when I was 16, I didn't really care about what was going on in the political landscape. I didn't.
Until Ross Perot. It all came full circle.
Yes. There we go.
I did it by design. Thank you for hanging out.
Thank you, Billy.
You're welcome, Ross. Ryan, thanks for hanging out.
Take my graphs and charts
away. We'll say goodbye next.
That is all she wrote, and I don't know who she is.
But she's done writing.
Yep.
Hanging them up. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed what you heard, and tomorrow should be even more exciting. Don't you think?
Why do you say that?
Because it's like a snowball that just keeps building and building. You know, I mean... We weren't here yesterday, so whatever happened. But today, you know, we started the snowball. And then by Friday, it's going to be a giant snow boulder.
All right. I'm all for it.
And it'll melt because it's going to be really hot on Friday. But still, we did our part. We built it, but then it melted.
Hopefully it doesn't melt before Friday.
I hope not.
Tomorrow might be the day. Tune in for that.
Maybe tomorrow. Yeah, we'll see. We'll find out. That's it. Thanks, everybody. Bye, Wendy.
See you, Bill.